It is Monday, May 23, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio. Very good morning to you. If you're just tuning in, the PGA Championship, they're on the back nine of that final round, and Mito Pereira, the Chilean, is 7-under for the tournament. He's through 10 holes, and he's got a one-shot lead over the American Cameron Young, who is 6-under par. He's through 12 holes. Zalatoris has dropped shots, and he's 5-under. Through 12 holes, the best of the Aussies is Lucas Herbert, who is 1-under for the tournament, 6 shots off the pace. And Herbert is through 13 holes in his final round. And Cameron Smith pulled a shot back there late and finished at even par. And he is in the clubhouse after shooting a 1-under 69. Overnight, Manchester City won the Premier League. They came from 2-0 down against Aston Villa and won 3-2. Liverpool did their job beating Wolves 3-1, but City winning the title with that win. We saw Burnley relegated. Tottenham finished fourth. Overnight in the Formula One, Max Verstappen won the Spanish Grand Prix after Charles Leclerc suffered engine failure when he appeared on course for victory. So Sergio Perez and George Russell filled the podium then with Verstappen. Daniel Ricciardo finished 12th. Yesterday in the V8s, Ford driver Cameron Waters made up for having a win taken off him at Perth in the previous round. He won 2 of 3 races at the Winton Super Sprint, and he moved to third in the Drivers' Championship. He's 333 points off leader Shane Van Gisbergen. In the AFL, yesterday the Giants, with Mark McVay in charge for the first time as interim coach, the Giants beat the West Coast Eagles by 52 points at Giants Stadium. Hawthorn, a boil over in Tassie, they beat the Brisbane Lions by 5 points. And Collingwood beat Fremantle by 36 points yesterday. The Swans had a loss on Friday night, 15 points. They lost to Carlton, who, edging closer towards being premiership contenders this year, Carlton, at long, long last. But a 15-point defeat and a pretty serious-looking hamstring injury to Josh Kennedy, their champion midfielder as well. So not good news there. Yesterday in the NRL, we saw the Bunnies go down again in Dubbo. Hasn't been a happy hunting ground for them. Apex Oval, 32-12, the Raiders in Josh Papali'i's 250th. Outstanding performance, scored a try as well. And Cronulla beat the Titans 25-18. We're singing the praises of Lachie Miller, the debutant, the Olympian, who was a Rugby Sevens player with Australia and got a deal there with the Sharks and certainly made the most of it there yesterday. To talk more about Round 11 in the NRL, we've got Phil Buzz Rothfield coming up next. How was your weekend, Buzz?
Yeah, very good, thank you. There were a couple of things in the NRL that were disappointing, weren't they? Geez, I felt for Tom Turbo when he went off. For the competition, not just Manly, to lose, you know, the Dally M Player of the Year. And, geez, it was, you know, it wasn't a nice sight, was it, as he left the field in agony with that dislocated shoulder, and he's now out for the year, which is really sad for the game. It also throws up a lot of issues for State of Origin, with Luttrell out as well. Luttrell's still in America working on his knee and hamstring. It's, you know, Origin's crept up on us. Next weekend, they actually pick the team for game one. And I noticed the TAB over the weekend, when Tom Turbo was ruled out, a huge influence on the betting market. The Blues were $1.35. I didn't think they should be that short, but they're now out for $1.55. Mm-hmm. And guys, you look at the form of the Broncos and you look at the form of the Cowboys, I said, this is going to be a belter of an Origin series. It really is. And Lods, I think the big question mark around this football side that Freddie and Greg Alexander pick next weekend is around the centres without our two champions. Mm. Look, I think there's four players. I think the obvious ones are Tony Staggs and Stephen Crichton from Penrith to play in the centres. But if Freddie's going to be loyal, which he's renowned for, I'm thinking Campbell Graham is still in the race, even though South is struggling, and I think Jack Whiten is the other option if he's just going to pick the best 17 players available. So that's going to be really interesting next Sunday night in the centres.
Yeah, it'll be difficult to leave a guy like Stephen Crichton out because of his combination with all those other Penrith players we're expecting to be named in that squad. And then, of course, you know, he's playing with the side that's coming last, but it's nearly, And Tony Staggs deserves an opportunity, but I'm just wondering whether they might go with Matt Burton because of the fact that he was the Dally M centre last year. He's played with Luai, and it's such an advantage when you've got blokes that know each other's game inside out and they can play well together in a short preparation.
It's a good point. Imagine that kicking game he's got. Imagine those torpedo bombs, the floaters, whatever they call them these days, in State of Origin. Imagine the poor Queensland fullback having to deal with that. Look,
Buzz, are we playing it up a bit as well? Like, I even listened to a couple of things that Freddie said. Surely we're still a much better team than Queensland. I feel like we've got injuries to some big players, right? And of course you miss that, but you look through the New South Wales team, what a problem to have. We've still got superstars there to pick. We've still got a brilliant team.
Yeah, there's no question about that. But you've got to remember, Clarkie, there's a couple of forwards there too from last year, like Angus Crichton at the Roosters and Daniel Saifidi, who will probably, on form, struggle to make the side. Where we are really, really fortunate is this amazingly brilliant Penrith side, and I think they will provide six players. They'll provide the halves, Cleary and Luai, Stephen Crichton most likely, and Brian Toho. They've also got Isaiah Yeo at lock forward and Liam Martin.
Yeah.
Now, the other guy I wanted to talk about as a possible seventh, if Loz, you love talking about combinations and the fact Matt Burton played at Penrith, I will stick with Damien Cook for game one because he's been there, done that, and he's an out and out, he's a great player. But Souths are struggling and he's eventually going to, his form will be put under the microscope, although personally I don't think he's going that bad. But you do have, if you talk combinations, you've got Abby Corrissau at the Panthers. And I think he was in the side last year as an 18th man. He misbehaved and was sent home from camp for breaking the COVID bubble. But I don't think, if we're to get into trouble, if we're to lose game one, I think Abby Corrissau will then come into the picture.
Yeah, I think if anything happened to Cookie, I think Cookie's quite safe there. I know that Souths aren't playing well. I think Cookie's been one of their best players this year, and I thought on the weekend he tried hard. And if something did happen to Cookie, I think Appy would be a very, very good replacement. But
it's interesting, guys, they're going to pick a squad, I think, of 21 rather than just the 17 and an 18th man.
Because of COVID?
Yeah, and because of the flu and...
Is Cookie not your Australian number nine, Buzz?
I would pick him at this stage for the World Cup.
Okay.
But, Clarkey, Origin is going to have a huge bearing on that selection. There's a fella in Melbourne, Harry Grant, who I think has probably been the best hooker in the competition for a couple of years. Bad, an extremely rare blunder by Craig Bellamy to move him to halfback over the weekend against the Cowboys. But Cook v. Grant is a bit like, Cleary versus Cherry Evans. There's for the World Cup later in the year, and I know we're getting off topic here with Origin, this has some exciting one-on-ones going to happen in State of Origin. And Clarkey, I don't think we can ignore the Broncos and Cowboys form. The Cowboys in particular, what a story they are. I did a piece in the Telegraph today, and I've had to give up a few of my colleagues. At the start of the year, we're all asked to name our top eight and our wooden spooners. Now, eight of us tipped the Cowboys to come last.
Name and shame them, Buzz. Who are they? I want to know who they are.
Michael Carayannis.
Oh, beautiful. Worst judge in the game, yep.
Yeah. Paul Kent.
Oh, terrible. Terrible.
No doubt let me know about in the green room tonight. Nick Walshaw, David Riccio, Fatima Cadeau, James Phelps. Oh, I've misspelled Dennis Ritchie.
Oh, Dennis Ritchie's on that list.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not surprised then.
So am I. But you know what? I had a look at the. I got Jared Daffy to send me their betting fluctuations before I wrote the column. Mm. And in round six, they were at $101. They lost round one to the Bulldogs. And then they lost round six, five or six, to the Warriors. You know, probably the two weakest sides in the comp. But we're talking, you know, we're looking big picture. Dalian Coach of the Year, if you had a market now, Todd Payton would be hard to, he'd be fairly short, wouldn't he, guys?
Well, he'd be up there. He'd be in the discussion. I think he's done a remarkable job, Toddy. And given, you know, what happened last year and people were thinking that the players were off him, but he stood his ground and he was very strong. And obviously the players have jumped on board and supported him. I'll tell you what, Buzz, yesterday watching the Sharks and the Titans game, I was very impressed with your fullback, Lachie Miller. What a debut for a 27-year-old.
I tell you what impresses me about that young fella. When was it? Late last year before the Olympics, a guy, his name's Anthony Field, he's a player agent, and rang me and said, look, I've got a fair story. Lachie Miller. Now, he was still a month or so off going to the Olympic Games. And he said to me he wants to play NRL. I said, geez, this is unusual. Before the Olympics, you know, I didn't know how rugby union would take it if one of their players came out and said, look, after the, I'm going to switch codes. But, look, he had the courage and, you know, the fortitude to come out and say what he actually wanted to do. And he had an offer on the table from rugby union. He knocked it back and he backed himself, not just to go to Tokyo, but to get an NRL club. And they shopped him around. The Titans were interested and so were the Sharks. And his performance yesterday, 27 years of age, the speed he's got, you know, the step he's got, he seems to have all the skills. I think it's a huge boost for Cronulla for the rest of the season because, look, Will Kennedy will come back and will play fullback. But this fella from 14, he's a halfback, he's a 5'8", he's a fullback. As I think I heard you say, he could probably even play somewhere else, maybe lock forward for stage of a game. I think it's a wonderful boost for Cronulla to have a 14 of his ability, and his versatility is a huge thing for the show.
And the Raiders just too good for Souths yesterday. So where are Souths at, Buzz? Because I think now it seems like they've almost closed the premiership window on themselves.
Yeah, I saw Paul Crawley wrote that this morning. Souths were, and I spoke to Blake Siley and I spoke to Jason Demetrio at Magic Round last week, and Souths were, their aim for the next month was to try and hang in there and stay in a position in the finals race where they could launch their charge when Latrell Mitchell comes back in, what, 3 or 4 weeks. But that performance yesterday, I would suggest, would indicate even with Latrell back, it will make a difference, but I've got my doubts now about them making the eight. They're not playing well at all. Adam Reynolds is obviously the story of the year so far as bad recruitment goes, and the fact they let him go, and I don't want to back Lachlan Ilias, but he's not... he's not Adam Reynolds. And it's quite obvious that even with the captaincy, Cody Walker is not the player he was when he was Dalian 5-8 of the year last year. He still doesn't look happy. And this side is struggling big time. And it's what happens, and it happens all the time when Wayne Bennett leaves the club. And I'm not saying that Wayne Bennett left them in poor shape. What I'm saying is they miss his man management around the football club, and players like Cody Walker, who he was so tight with, and Wayne had could get the best out of him. He's no longer there. So without Reynolds and Bennett and Dane Gagai, I think they're just about... They're not cooked, but they're going to struggle to make the top eight, I don't think. But I don't want to take anything away from Canberra, because Canberra's one of the best stories of the weekend. And the way they turned up yesterday for Josh Papali'i in his 250th game, the way Ricky Stewart has turned this club around over the last 3 weeks, do you know what I think it coincided with, Lachie?
What's that?
Jared Croker. Remember? He turned up to training and to make his comeback.
Yep.
And remember Jack White and yelled out to the players, skip us back. They all went and jumped on him. And it, just having him back in that side showed that they weren't down and out, this football club.
Yep.
And they still had a season to play for. They mightn't have a halfback. They might have lost their hooker. But it showed they hadn't given up. And just that, you know, there's no one like Jared Croker in the competition for that Canberra Raiders logo, the Canberra Raiders, the lime green jersey, and what it means to those players. And they were just outstanding yesterday.
They were. They were very, very good. And you're right with Papa Lee. But I thought he and Joe Tarpany were excellent. They really took the ball forward. They were aggressive in everything they did, and everyone else jumped on board. I'll tell you what is disturbing, Buzz, in your column today, death threats to our referees. That's just not on.
Yeah, that's terrible, mate. It's made me start to think about, you know, the regular criticism of referees. I'm like everyone else. I get on Twitter during games and I blew up last Thursday night when there was an obvious obstruction. They let go, the bunker let go in the Newcastle Broncos game. You know, I blew up and I originally thought the Manly tackle on the Parramatta winger, which Desi Hasler blew up about, was a fair tackle. But I think replays show there was head contact, and while it didn't deserve to be put on report, it was a fair penalty. This is so out of order, death threats to referees, as you just said. And I had a good chat to Peter Volandis about it yesterday. Look, they get 98% of decisions right. And you know what? If we didn't have a bunker, there'd be far more mistakes we'd be complaining about. You remember the Nines tournament in Perth 18 months ago? Remember Cody Ramsey scored?
Mm.
He clearly put the ball outside the in-goal area, put the ball down outside the in-goal area. There was no bunker in that tournament, and it knocked Penrith out of the tournament. So without a bunker, we're going to have a lot more mistakes. So I just think with the recruitment of young referees from the park, and we want more to come through because a couple of the guys there, you know, are getting on, like Ben Cummins. I think we've got to think twice about our criticism of them. And while we all get worked up and while, you know, we love our football teams, we love to win each weekend, they are going to make mistakes. And the bunker is there to limit those mistakes, and they're always going to make errors, but it's just gone too far with, you know, the NRL have had to put on extra security for these guys to walk them to the car park after games and things like that. It's just disgraceful.
Mm.
And I think we all need to think long and hard about it.
Buzz, the Tigers, 36-22 against the Dogs there on Friday night, but the pressure will still be on to get a result again against Souths this week.
Yeah, I see Michael Chambers has written about that in Nine Entertainment this morning. Poor old Madge, his last 6 weeks haven't been too bad. And obviously, Jackson Hastings is steering them around the park nicely. They played well, with not brilliantly, to beat the depleted Canterbury Bulldogs the other day. Look, I can understand him being still under the microscope. I think the West Tigers board and their chief executive, Justin Pascoe, are in a position where they can't just think about the remainder of this season. They need to look big picture. They need to look 2 or 3 years ahead. They need to look at all their options. And there's some fair coaches who are out there available, including Cameron Serraldo from Penrith. And so I can understand that, you know, Madge has had some lean seasons, but I'll tell you what, the coach is doing a lot worse than he is at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got any news on the Canterbury coach, Buzz? Do we know whether it's going to be sort of an experienced coach? I mean, we've heard that, you know, plenty of names being linked to the position, but how far down the track do you think the Bulldogs are? And have they got anyone in mind, do you think, Buzz, or are they just open-minded?
As you know, was. I'm not close to Phil Gould. Look, he's been crook all weekend, so he obviously hasn't been talking to other coaches for some time. Mm. Or, look, I know Gus says things and goes back on it, like Baz. He did say last week that he was going to get an experienced coach. So if you take him on his word, there are only two experienced coaches on the market right now, which is Shane Flanagan and Paul Green. Having said that, there is nothing to stop him going to a Michael Maguire or to any other NRL coaches in a job right now just to sound them out and see if there's any interest. This sort of thing has happened before.
Yep.
Des Hasler was under contract at Manly, had another year to go when Canterbury decided he was the man they wanted. How long ago was that? 8 years ago?
Yep.
Remember Todd Greenberg? There was drama because he pitched him while he was under contract. So I wouldn't put that past Gus to be looking elsewhere like that. But I guess it's a wait and see. Look, they're in all sorts of trouble, aren't they? And I think just for their fans, for their sponsors, I wrote over the weekend about Arthur Laundy not happy at how things are working out there. I think they need to restore some confidence ASAP, just for all their stakeholders, and come out and make a statement and find a new coach in the very near future.
Thanks so much, Buzz.
Yeah, have a good week, guys.
PGA Championship, and Mito Pereira now has a two-stroke lead, 7 under par, and he's through 13 holes in the final round there at Southern Hills in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he leads by 2 shots from Will Zalatoris and the American Cameron Young, who are both 5 under. And I just saw Lucas Herbert just drop back in his final round. Yeah, he's having not a happy finish to his round, Lucas Herbert. He was 3 under for the tournament at one stage. He's now 2 over and 3 over through 16 holes. So best of the Aussies is Cam Smith. The Aussie tied for 14th as it stands, shot a 1 under 69 in his final round to finish even par. For the tournament now, we're going to talk French Open very shortly. And as far as the Aussies were concerned on day one at Roland Garros, 4 have gone down and the lone victor was qualifier Jason Kubler, who won in straight sets against American Dennis Kudla. And Roger Rashid coming up next. Morning, Rog.
Morning, guys. How are we?
Very well, thanks. So here we are, day one, Roland Garros, and tough day for the Aussies, but Jason Kubler is the lone victor.
Yeah, the first round is over 3 days, so that was introduced probably now a decade ago. They decided to throw in the Sunday, and I think it's good. I mean, I actually think the major championships can start on the Saturday, actually. It's weekend of sport, and get an extra day in as well of probably a bit of revenue, some TV viewing as well. People are home on the weekends, and or they can get out to the event if they're in the local space. But Jason, it's a good. It's a story where he's a journeyman on the tennis tour. He's playing in his 6th major as far as getting into the major events. So had to go through qualifying. That's a big result in itself to get through on clay courts there, and he came up against an American, Dennis Kubler, who's a really good young man, but also, again, just a bit of a journeyman, battles in and out of the main draws, as in the main draw this year, but so he doesn't have a lot of weight behind any of his game, hasn't got any big weapons, just a nice, solid player. So it was a really good first-round match-up, and, you know, obviously it was a very tight match, 6-6-6, so it could have gone either way, but to get through qualifying, win a round at the French and get into your second round, you'd be pretty excited about that. And he has a chance to play probably Cam Norrie from the UK, who's the number 10 seed and who's a left-hander. But it's a good opportunity for him.
Rog, what makes the French so hard for Aussies? Again, obviously playing on clay's a no-brainer, but do we train here in Australia, or do we have a facility where you can prep for the French? Because I feel like it's probably our toughest one.
Yeah, it is. We were originally brought up on the grass, then synthetic grass, then it's a hard court and it's a fast hard court. So and now the courts are a little slower. So what happens is you very much get your skill set's really between 0 shots and 3 and 4 shots on a clay court. You know, so because the points are over really quickly on clay court, you got to play longer points. The way the ball bounces off the court through different spins and angles is really, you know, that's a different type of tennis IQ as well. And if, to put clay courts here in Australia, we just don't have we just don't have the climate for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, to just maintain and keep those courts at European standard, it wouldn't be feasible. It would be virtually probably impossible to do. It would be a major shift in your education. So really, the education's overseas. Get over there as early as you can. Try and bed down in some of those places. And if you do, you can improve your tennis skill set, because you end up having some different ways to win tennis matches. But it's just brutally hard. Yeah. Outside of that, the physicality, the mental drain and strain on players trying to win this event, like Novak's, like Rafa, young Alcaraz, who's going to 19-year-old, who's the third favourite. Anyone who's out there trying to win, Ash Barty, when she tried, you know, when she won here, Sam Stowe. So that it's just physically, mentally, it's pretty grueling. You're just more. You've got to be on more often than you are on a faster surface.
Well, you mentioned Carlos Alcaraz. He got away to a good start.
Yeah, look, he's just one of those players that I just like what he does when he turns up. He just puts it out there on the tennis court. He's one of these young kids that when you watch grow up, that's all he believed in. You know, he was coached like that. He was prepared to make mistakes to improve as well. So when you watched him through 16, 17, 18, now on the tour, he was happy to go after the ball. And I think there's two ways of coaching. There's a protective way, and there's a way of actually really going after it and being proactive, and then working from there back and learning what a safety net is on a tennis court and how you actually make that. You know, you'd rather be a hitter than a non-hitter. Very hard to sort of to reskill yourself to someone that actually goes after the ball. So, and he's got an attitude that he wants to compete. You know, point every point in and out. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. That side of the draw, just because of who it is. Novak trying to defend his 35 at his 35th birthday. It's amazing you're 35 and number one in the world, isn't it? So you would not have even thought that would have been the case, but with these champions. But we didn't have a great day on the court for the Aussies with Kokkinakis. I thought was a chance against Ramos Vinales. He was, you know, he lost in four, but to a very experienced clay court, but someone who he had a really good shot at. Popperin has really been struggling this season, 2022. He played a really experienced Bernini from Italy, who's a former top 10 player in the world. So that was, and Chris O'Connor, who got into the main draw as a special exempt that a Tennis Australia do with the French Open. He lost as well, and he's an interesting case. He's trying to secure himself in the top 100 players in the world, and so he's thinking of missing Wimbledon because there are no points attached to it this year, and playing some other events so he could get some points and get himself into that top 100 position in the world and secure himself. And it's quite interesting that he's decided to put that on the table, because all day long you'd want to play a major event, you'd want to play at Wimbledon, but he's trying to put his, trying to put his career ahead of now of Wimbledon because they don't have points attached to them.
Now, Jordan Thompson tomorrow has the hardest task in tennis, just about Rafael Nadal on clay, and is $21 head-to-head with Tab, and no price offered for Nadal because theoretically he's less than $1. But where is Rafa heading into this tournament? We know, of course, of his prowess here at Roland Garros, but a lot of talk about his body and whether he can sustain, obviously, the level at this tournament that he's been able to for so long.
Yeah, good point. Massive unknown, really, for Rafa, in the sense that, not unknown with his history, but generally for a clay court season, he's gobbled up one, two, sometimes three titles on the way leading into Paris, whereas there are no titles near his name. And so there's limited amount of matches, and there's a concern with his body. But I think the adrenaline of Paris and what happens when he walks onto those courts will change things. I don't think, you know, who knows what we see with his body, but he's still going to be, I think, the second favourite. And, I think Novak, I still like Novak as the favourite, and I think Rafa is the second. He sits alongside of, and then you've got to put the young 19-year-old outside of that. So, look, for Jordan, is it a tough ask? Yeah, it's You wouldn't call them impossible asks, but it's about as impossible as you can get, I think, in a sporting matchup, because you need to go to war with some weapons against Nadal, and Jordan's just a great competitor, and does a lot of good things, but doesn't have any weapons that can put a dent in Nadal. So it's going to be very much played on Rafa's terms. It's good to get someone in the first round, but I think the way Rafa deals with people right through the course of the draw is a great education tool, because he treats us as if it's his final, the first round, and it's really important for him to play at a high level early in the tournament, in relation to his output. So it's going to be a tough ask. Well, I'm looking forward to watching, so we'll see where that sits. But if you're Jordan, you're pretty excited. You get on Philippe Chatrier at the centre court. You're playing the all-time greatest clay court player in the history of the game. And it's going to be a bit crowded. So I think sometimes you can go, hey, give me that. I'd love to experience that during my career. Instead of actually, so there are times when you'd probably like to experience playing the greats on the big courts, and this is one of them.
What about the ladies' side of the draw? We've got no Ash Barty, but the likes of Tomljanović, how's she going to go?
Yeah, look, tough ass. She plays Annette Contivet. He's the fifth seed from Spain, so really talented player. Again, from Spain, brought up on clay. So was Isla, but I just think it's just a few too many weapons. Isla hasn't quite found some consistency throughout the course of this year as well, so that's a tough one. Astra Sharma, who I thought might get through her round, lost overnight, 7-5 in the third set, had good opportunities, but I really like her game. I think she's a developing athlete from Australia. And Daria Gavrilova-Seville, she's calling herself Daria Seville now, who married Luke Seville from Adelaide, she's up as well tonight as well. So we've got a few players in action, and it'll be interesting to see where they sit. We're looking for a couple of... we'd like to get a couple of victories, but it's never been a tournament for us in Australia where we've seen some deep runs. It's been a real struggle for us to get there. Obviously, we've had the women who have done amazingly well over here, in Paris. I said over here, but I'm not actually there. I'd like to be there. The interesting thing that went on last night, I'm not sure if you saw it. Coco Gauff is a great young player from out of the US. He's going to be a superstar. She had a coaching, there's a whole lot of things, discussions around coaching violations. She had one, a coaching warning given to her from the chair umpire, and it was handled so well for a young woman. She walked up and she just had a quiet conversation with the umpire and said, I know what you've done. I accept that, but I actually don't get coaching. There are no hand signals between us. And I've been trying to tell my father since I was eight to stop to not talk to me while I played. and they just had this great interaction where it was really respectful. The umpire said, look, I'm just doing my job, what I saw through my lens. So I just wanted to give you a little, just a soft warning. And they just had this really cool interaction where, sometimes, obviously, with the emotion of sport, it gets quite heated, and we've seen it in the past. But I just thought the way she handled it just showed she's going to be a star and a real superstar in the game, because she's got this really good quality of handling her emotions under some times of duress.
Thanks so much, Rog. We'll chat in a couple of days.
See you, boys. Have a good day.
Ali Mosley coming up shortly, but we've got Claude on the line. Morning, Claude.
Good morning, boys. How are we?
Very well, thanks, mate. You've got a hero and villain for us.
Yeah, my hero is the Tigers. I know they only beat the Dogs, but we had over 11 players out, which was a great effort. And my villain is the media as well, just because leading up to the game, they kept talking about how the Dogs might have three players out and poor Dogs and this and that. And they kept talking about Melbourne missing two from the spine. We had 11 out. We had Laurie, Dewey, Brooks, and Simpkin. That's our whole spine out, plus about 7 or 8 other players. So I think, the media makes such a big deal out of other teams, but they just can't give the Tigers a break.
Tigers have had some roster issues or availability issues, haven't they? No doubt about that, Lozza. So... Yeah,
we've had the media on us for the last 2 years.
Yeah, you're the media.
Won't cut us a break. cut us some slack, mate.
You know you're the media now.
Well, Buzz is just
telling... Who would have thought that?
Don't call me a journo, ever. What about Buzz is also today, this morning, already talking about, well, there's pressure on Madge if we don't beat South next week.
Actually,
hang on.
It's actually Michael Chambers wrote the story on the back page of the Herald today.
But even that, I'm like, hang on. Like, can we at least stay on Monday? We just won. Can we, like, let us celebrate on Monday our victory and then talk about next week, maybe on Wednesday. But Madge is under the pump already. Like,
it's just going to be one of these seasons for Madge. He's just going to have to ride it out. He's going to have to get victories. Otherwise, it's going to be a topic every couple of weeks.
We just won.
Who'd be a coach?
Tough job, boys. Tough job.
No, thanks.
Thanks for the call, though, Claude. You're in the mix. Keep them coming. We got that $100 gift card and a case of Saint and Sinner alcoholic kombucha to give away. 1353 53 is the open line number. And well, Ali Mosley from Sky Racing joining us now. G'day, Ali. How are you this morning?
Good morning, team. I'm feeling good, fresh for a Monday.
Very good. Now, hopeful. What did you make of its win in the Lord Mayor's Cup for Annabelle Neesham and Rachel King on Saturday?
So impressive. I loved watching him. Well, I didn't love watching him when he almost took Corey Brown out in the mounting yard. I don't think Corey liked it either. He said he ran back faster than he's ever moved. But he was on his best behaviour, so I snuck out the back because I was back on track on Saturday, which I love because I could go and chat to everyone. And I was having a chat to his strapper, and she said she actually, when she brought him over on the truck, she left the earmuffs on, which made a huge difference. She said it just settled him, and he was settled from the time he stepped off the truck, settled in the stalls, doing everything right in the mounting yard. He was probably maybe just a little bit up on his toes, but he's obviously just that kind of horse. And he's gone out with the pony. So in track work in the morning, he goes out with the pony to and from the track, which is, I mean, a lot of them do, but he obviously is the kind of horse that just needs that safety net with him. And he had the pony with him the whole time and he did everything right. He wasn't naughty at all behind the barriers. And Rach said he was on his best behaviour. And I think he's a real one to watch. Another one in Annabelle's camp, one of her European imports. She just does such a good job with them. She finds the trick to them, and Barky's not dissimilar. You know, they can be a little quirky, I think, particularly even the older ones. Like Hope was a five-year-old gelding, but she just seems to find the trick with them and get the best out of them.
We spoke this morning about Sam Clipperton, and he's absolutely flying at the moment.
Oh, I could not be more happy for Clipper. I spoke to Ronnie Quinton as well on Saturday, and we were talking about a host of things, but one of those was Sammy Clipperton, of course, who he was apprenticed to at one point to Ronnie, and I just think he just needed that boost of confidence, and I feel like a lot of jockeys just need that to kick through. I think Sammy, after he came back from Hong Kong, had a bit of a lull, and he's got the ability. It's just having that confidence to be able to go on with it. And after winning on Marzu, to come out and ride four winners on Saturday, particularly on a big card, it's quite a big deal for him. I think it'll kick him off through, and I can't wait to see what he can do. Bring the Spring Carnival, particularly on Marzu. I think he'll probably maybe win the Everest, which would be amazing.
Open the checkbook, Ali Tafani, at the National Broodmare Sale there at Magic Millions this week. I wonder how much she will go for it. I think it'll be a bit, put it that way.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be north of that $1 million mark for sure. I think there'll be a few north of the $1 million mark away game, just to mention another. But I'm a bit disappointed. I'm not going up this year. I normally always go up for the broodmares to see them all. And it's such an exciting sale, but we're going to Europe in 3 weeks. So I thought I'd better just bide my time. So, again, I just think she'll easily make north of $1 million, and everyone will want to be on her, the big boys. I'm sure she'll end up, you know, maybe the likes of a Coolmore or something like that going to one of their up-and-coming stallions like Justify. So I just love seeing those mares make good prices for all the work they've done.
Gee, I'll tell you what, Europe, gee, you're battling, Ali. Gosh.
Someone's got to do it.
Now, the Dubin Cup. It's moved to what will be a huge card at Eagle Farm now at this meeting on Saturday. There'll be three group ones there now.
Yeah, massive, massive. And so they've had to bump. I actually was just reading the press release this morning. So the poor, I really feel for them racing Queensland, because I've seen what we had to go through here for the better part of our autumn carnival. Just every week in, week out, we've had these relentlessly heavy tracks. And chatting to all the trainers on Saturday, they all said, most of them probably wouldn't want to run their horses on what the conditions like were Saturday, but there's no other choice. You know, a lot of them had been wound up. They'd had three trials, nowhere to go. You just have to bite the bullet and do it. And now Queensland are getting what we had, which has been such a such a shame for them. So massive meeting on Saturday. In fact, it's just going to be a bumper, an absolute bumper. We were the only meeting on Saturday here, but I'm sure all attention will be up there. Of course, we get to see Zaki, and hopefully, perhaps, it actually won't be as heavy of a surface. We know that Eagle Farm drains really well. So I think positive for Zaki is that it won't be a bottomless track. And then we also get to see the three-year-old filly stepping out, the BRC Sprint. It's going to be massive. Just a huge, huge day of racing there.
And what did you make of the win of Lombardo in the Goodwood on Saturday?
Oh, how good for Mick Price, hey? I just think, and Mick Kent as well, Mick Kent Jr., they've been having such a good season, and they're, you know, almost quiet achievers. They kind of tick away, but their strike rate is enormous. So I think just across the board for that stable and the partnership, relatively young partnership of Mick Price and Michael Kent Jr. to be flexing their muscles so early on and bringing good horses through the grades like they have with Lombardo, I think is a huge deal, and they're just going to be a real force to be reckoned with now. Great team.
Great stuff, Ali. Thanks so much, and we will chat later in the week.
Thanks, guys.